there.
A girth?
There's someone with their pants down right there.
Yeah.
They're pooping or peeing right there.
I borrowed Mum's phone, he says suddenly, holding it up for Millie to see. Millie takes it from him.
You stole it.
Oh, give it back, he says. Millie stares at the phone. She feels Jeremy staring at her. She wants to ring her mum more than anything, but what if she doesn't answer? What if she does answer? What if she answers and she doesn't want to talk to Millie? What if she answers and doesn't want to be her mum anymore? Can you stop being someone's mum if you want to? Jeremy takes the phone back.
Hey!
Millie says. Tell me the number, he says. Millie tells him. He types it in, presses the green button, and holds it up to her ear. And Millie takes a deep breath and holds the phone.
Bubble, bubble, bubble.
It rings and rings and rings, and rings and rings and rings.
Voicemail,
Millie says to Jeremy.
I'm sorry, Mum,
Millie starts to say, but her voice goes funny and she starts crying, and the words won't come out anymore, because it's her mum's voice. And she just said,
Mum,
out loud, and she didn't realize how much these two things would make her body hurt. Jeremy takes the phone from her and she doesn't look at him. She stops crying when he hands her an apple.
Thank you,
Millie says, and puts it on the floor beside her.
I'm sorry for making you cry, Captain Funeral,
Jeremy says.
It's okay, Captain Everything,
she says, wiping her eyes with her beer cozy.
I've got a plan.
Oh, I've got heaps of those.
Okay then, what's your plan?
It's top secret.
Millie rolls her eyes.
What's yours then?
He asks.
You'll tell.
I will not.
You will.
I will not.
Okay,
Millie says, moving in closer.
Promise?
Promise,
he replies, blinking solemnly.
You said you know everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know how that lady talks to everyone in the whole train sometimes?
The intercom?
Maybe.
It's called an intercom?
I need to find it.
What for?
She looks down at her beer cozy.
To do something good.
You're going to get in trouble.
She puts her face up close to his. He doesn't seem to know where to look.
I need your help, Captain Everything. Will you help me?
He gulps.
Yes. Yes, I will.
He stutters, clears his throat.
Captain Funeral!
Carl the Touch Typist. What is love, Agatha Panther? Carl announces, sloshing his wine around. Love? She asks, pressing her nose against the window. I can't see anything.
Exactly, exactly, Agatha Panther. It's too dark.
Yes. Her forehead bounces up and down on the glass of the window. It's making me feel uneasy. Carl, his eyes closed, nods vigorously. He leans forward unsteadily.
But it's worth it, he proclaims,
tapping his index finger on the table in front of Agatha and then raising it in the air as though appealing to a cricket umpire. Agatha turns back to him.
What?
It's worth it.
What is?
Love.
Worth what?
The struggle, the heartache, the turmoil.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Carl sips his wine.
Have you ever been in love, Agatha Panther? He says softly, swaying a little.
What? I had a husband for most of my life, you know that.
Yes, but...
Carl grabs Agatha's hands with his wine glass less hand and looks her in the eye.
Did you love him? Did you love him?
Agatha snatches her hand away, downs the last of her wine and plonks the glass on the table. She wipes her mouth with her sleeve.
I suppose so.
You suppose so. Did you tell him?
Why would I? It was assumed.
Assumed. Assumed!
Carl stands up and yells to the rest of the restaurant car as if he is delivering a public address. His wine splashes on the table as he flaps his arms around.
You assumed he knew you loved him.
Agatha stands up, grabs the wine from him, and throws back the rest of it.
Yes,
she says defiantly, breathy with the activity. They stare at each other for a few moments, both unsure of what the other will do. Eventually, they lower themselves to a seated position, as if they are playing mimes in a mirror. Carl likes the vein that sprouts out of her neck and runs up to her earlobe when she yells. He has a sudden urge to lick it, to run his tongue along it and put her earlobe between his teeth. He wants to take off her glasses, kiss her face, press himself against her. He wants to see what is below that brown suit.
Did he love you?
Carl says eventually. He drags his fingers through the spilled wine on the table. Agatha shrugs and stares into the darkness. Carl makes love heart shapes in the wine.
I'm sure he did.
It didn't matter. It doesn't matter. It was never the point.
It's the only point, he says.
Agatha leans her head against the back of the chair. Carl stares at her. Her old, tired face, her old, tired lips, her old, tired eyes. He stands up and shuffles around Manny to the other side of the booth. He slides in next to her. He can smell her now, mothballs and juice, somehow. She won't look at him. He moves in closer. Can feel her starchy suit on his arm, the heat of her body on his leg. Could he love this woman? Could she love him? He takes a deep breath, grabs her face, pulls her toward him, and kisses her. He pulls back from Agatha, leaving her stunned and breathless, and stands.
We're only here because of sex, you know? And you're ashamed of it. You all are. You. And you. And you. Yes, you. Just intercourse her, he says to the young couple in the next booth over.
He looks to Manny for support. Carl's sure he sees Manny give a thumbs up.
No,
Carl says.
Fuck,
he says.
Fuck each other, he says to the couple.
We do, the man says.
The woman lets out a strangled sound and hits him on the bicep.
It's the spirit, Carl says. Fuck,
he says again. The word feels amazing in Carl's mouth.
Fuck, fuck, fuckity fuck. Say it with me, Agatha.
Agatha sits in the booth, not looking at him, holding onto the table as though it's the only thing keeping her upright.
There's other words too, you know, Carl says on a roll now. Pubic, nipples, pink bits. Get a hold of yourself, sir, Derek says, storming down the aisle, notepad flapping around his neck.
Two small children at the table behind them are wide-eyed.
Mom,
one says.
Fuck,
the other one adds. The old woman, who has been too engrossed in her book to look at her husband, suddenly says,
boobs.
What?
Her husband says.
Yes, Carl says, pointing at her. That's right. Hey,
Derek stamps his foot. You! He walks closer to Carl and tries to shoo him with his hands.
You're...
He spits as he talks. I knew you were trouble. He writes a note on his notepad, tears it off and throws it at Carl. It swings through the air like it's conducting music.
Out! You're banned from the eating area.
Carl smiles hugely.
Great, he says. That's fucking great.
Agatha, who has been silent the entire time, stands and yells.
I think it's 9:23 p.m, but I'm not sure,
and pushes past Carl.
Agatha, Carl says.
He hoists Manny up to rest on his shoulder in the same way Branson Spike held his stereo and follows her out of the carriage, but not before turning around to face his audience.
Thank you,
he says, and takes a bow.
What?
the old man says to his wife. The night is long for Carl. Agatha locks him out of the cabin. They are drunk and loud, and he enjoys it. He feels Italian or Mediterranean, foreign, anyway, as though they're in a faraway country, hurtling through mountainous terrain. He throws his arms around as though he's directing something. He uses dramatic language from films. He feels his face bending and moving in ways it never has. She pushed him away and climbed past him, and he was amazed at himself and at the moment because everyone stared. So he trundled off after her because that's what he was supposed to do, yes? Now he yells, Agatha! Just for the benefit of the audience listening in on his drama. His drama! And knocks on their cabin door, and there is so much silence. Big and empty, like the desert and the sky. And he looks down at his hands, holds them up to the light, and thinks, you magnificent bastard. He knows Agatha doesn't want him. But it doesn't hurt in the place it should, and in fact it doesn't hurt at all. This is real life. Heartbreak. He's had his heart broken by a real woman. He kissed her just like they do in the films, or perhaps like people do in real life. He wouldn't know. He just took her head in his hands and kissed her, with everyone watching. They all looked at him as though he was someone who did things, someone who may be questionable in spirit, and no one has ever looked at him like that before. And the thrill of not being linear, of grabbing a woman's face with both hands and kissing her, and everyone watching. So he sits outside the cabin and talks and talks and talks. He tells her everything there is to know about him. His shoe size, his favourite teacher at primary school, his son, the time Evie kissed someone else, his phobia of low-flying objects, why he doesn't miss his fingers, the nursing home, his escape, everything. And just as he is falling asleep, he whispers through the keyhole, that's it. That's everything I have. He starts to fall asleep, his back against the door, his legs stretched out across the corridor, but then he remembers something else and says, wait, and puts his lips against the door. I think I love you, but I could never love you like I loved Evie. But there is nothing from Agatha, nothing at all. He listens for something, but there is nothing. He thinks he can hear her crying, but he can't be sure. And he falls asleep in an uncomfortable position, one arm around Manny, and dreams of voids and blackness, and it feels like nothing. Another thing Carl knows a little bit about. Crying. Carl can count on one hand the number of people who have cried in front of him. Evie, his mother. His uncle cried when Carl's mother died, and it was not like the crumpled-up, giving-in crying he'd seen before. His uncle cried as though it was an activity, each tear pushed out with a violence that made Carl feel like he was doing it wrong. Everyone knows that everyone else has a crying face, just as they all have an orgasm face, but they're on the list of faces no one sees. Everyone knows everybody else masturbates and cries, and you speak to each other with this contract, you carry on conversations with this see-through wall between you. I don't masturbate or cry. I don't masturbate or cry. I don't masturbate or cry. But because I really do, I know you do too, because we're all the same. He had seen Evie's crying face, orgasm face, terrified face, death face. Was that love, then, when you stopped pretending? When you were able to say to another person, I masturbate. I cry. I'm scared. I die.
Agatha Panther. 7:36 a.m. Agatha wakes, looks at her watch. Is that the time, the real time, or train time? She begins conducting her age tests regardless. 7:38. She tries to use the window as a mirror to stare in disbelief at her face, but her eyes keep focusing beyond the glass and on the landscape outside. The blue of the night is slowly making way for the warmth of the morning light. It's not night, but it's not yet morning, and the air looks like it's made of honey.
Does this happen every morning? Agatha says.
7:40. She can't stop looking at the honey light.
What important thing am I doing every morning that I miss this?
7:42. She can feel Carl's body through the wall, can hear him snoring out in the hallway. She lay in her bed last night, listening to him through the door but trying not to, holding her hands up to her ears but only half-heartedly, and she thought about him sitting next to her, his hand on the top of Millie's head, the way he held coffee cups, the way he sat with his legs crossed, always, jiggling his top foot, and she thought about touching him, and being touched by him. And the thought was not unpleasant. When had she last been kissed? And then she thought about his question. If she had loved her husband. And she didn't think she knew. 7:53.
They're talking me into it, she whispers, clutching at her throat.
7:54.
Carl looks at me in a way Ron never did, she says.
7:55. She lies in bed and feels that she does not deserve anything good. 7:57. She opens the door. Carl is standing there, his fist raised, like he's about to knock on the door.
Agatha, he says.
Carl, she says.
I was...
Carl says, just as Agatha says, are you... They both shake their heads shyly.
You go, Carl says. No, you,
Agatha says. A voice comes over the loudspeaker.
You're all going to die. It's okay.
Carl and Agatha look at each other.
Millie, they say together.
And then Derek walks down the hallway toward them.
You,
he points at Carl.
And you.
He points at Agatha. His face is in her face. She can smell his breath, toothpaste and coffee.
Ah, in.
He puts his face right up to Carl's.
Very big trouble.
He looks at the mannequin.
You too, FYI.
8:06. Agatha sits in a chair in Derek's office. The chair is similar to the ones she has at home. It's brown and creaks when she moves in it. She watches Derek pace the room from one wall to the other. It's a tiny space, so he can only take 2 steps and then has to stop to turn around. He breathes hard through his nose. His notepad flaps around his neck as he walks. 8:07. Agatha tries to think of names for the chair. She has her hands folded in her lap. Carl is seated next to her. He puts a tentative hand on her hands. Agatha bats him away. He yelps. She doesn't look at him. The chair of dislike.
Swearing,
Derek says, and walks 2 steps. His hands are in fists by his side. He turns around.
Kissing.
2 steps, turns around. His steps are fast, purposeful, but contained, as if he's trying to get to a bus that's rounding the corner but doesn't want to let on that he's rushing.
Fraternizing with sex dolls.
2 steps, turns around. Nods toward the plastic man Carl calls Manny. Faces them with his arms crossed.
This is the Indian Pacific train, not Big Brother, understand?
8:08.
Calm down, man,
Carl says. Derek stops mid-step, closes his eyes and shouts,
I am calm.
He breathes deep and massages his temples.
We're just living, Derek, Carl says. You should try it.
Derek says,
don't YOLO me. My house, remember?
Derek grabs the edge of the desk with both hands. 8:08:46. There is one small moment when Agatha feels something for Derek, where she recognizes hurt in another human being. But it doesn't last long. 8:09. Derek sits on the desk and crosses his legs.
"Anything else you'd like to share?"
Derek asks. Agatha shakes her head. "No." She assumes Carl does the same, but she still won't look at him. Derek pulls a phone out of his pocket. Agatha can see a thin film of sweat on his upper lip. She grimaces. The beads of sweat reveal something of himself, and it seems weak to Agatha. She squirms at the betrayal of his body, at his inability to control emotion and body temperature. Chair of disgust. Derek thrusts the phone in front of them both. Agatha and Carl both move forward to look at the screen. It's a photo of the young flannelette-wearing drunk in Kalgoorlie. There, on the arm, "Carl the touch typist was here."
"Oh," Carl says.
Agatha hits him on the arm.
"Typist!"
Carl rubs his arm and doesn't look at her.
"FYI, it's the mayor of Kalgoorlie's son," Derek says, looking at them with the kind of hateful glee usually reserved for cannibals lording over hard-won prey.
"Ah,"
Carl says.
"He's a big man, the mayor of Kalgoorlie,"
Derek says. Agatha hits Carl on the arm again.
"Ow,"
Carl says.
"And BTW, they've matched the tag to the Warwick Vale nursing home and the department store nearby,"
Derek says.
"Oh," Carl says. "Ring any bells, Carl the touch typist?"
Derek says Carl's name and title, using his fingers to indicate air quotes.
"I'm sure I'm not the only Carl the touch typist in the world,"
Carl says.
"I'm sure you are," Derek says. "Well, aren't you about to shit yourself with happiness, Derek?"
Carl asks.
"I certainly am not,"
Derek says. 8:10.
"BTW, there's this."
Derek shows them a picture on his phone of Carl's face with "wanted" across the bottom of it. Carl grins.
"Ah," Carl says. "Think this is funny, do you?"
Derek says.
"No,"
Carl says, swallowing his grin.
"I'll say again," Derek says. "Anything you'd like to share, if you cooperate, the penalty might not be as severe."
8:10:35. As Carl shakes his head, "No," Agatha can feel something bubbling inside of her. It's been bubbling inside of her for too long, and she needs to stop it. So she answers the question with something that will stop the feeling. She can't betray a feeling. She doesn't want the sweat on her upper lip to show. So she says,
"This man kidnapped me."
8:11. Carl turns to look at Agatha, but she doesn't catch his eye. She looks at her knees as if they're interesting. They are a little bit.
"New kinkle,"
she thinks, scratching at her left knee through her stockings. The door bursts open. The blonde Indian Pacific woman walks in, holding Millie's hand.
"Millie,"
Carl says.
"Thank God."
Agatha thinks, "Millie, thank God," but she doesn't say it. The woman says,
"She's okay. She was with my boy."
Millie climbs onto Carl's lap. Agatha glances down at her interesting knees again.
"Go easy, Derek," the woman says from the doorway. "She's only a child, remember?"
Derek watches her close the door behind her.
"Oh, up your jumper, Mill,"
he says after a few moments. He looks at Millie.
"The devil child, more like it."
Millie leans her back into Carl's chest. 8:12.
"Wanted,"
Derek says, reading from the screen of his phone.
"Assault. Robbery."
Agatha says,
"Robbery?"
Carl says,
"Well?"
as if the point could be argued. Derek puts his phone back in his pocket.
And now kidnapping. Nail in the coffin, wouldn't you say? Who's lolling now?
Carl asks.
What am I doing?
Millie asks. Kidnapping?
Carl says, no one's kidnapping anyone.
Agatha says,
except for you.
Carl says,
Agatha, I know you're mad at me, but...
Agatha says,
sir, kindly cease with the familiarities,
holding up a hand to him.
That man on your phone there,
Carl says.
Agatha hit him on the head with a plastic leg. Just so you know.
8:14.
You're going to hell, Millie says.
What did you say?
Derek asks.
Dad said parking inspectors go to hell, Millie says.
Your father's dead,
Agatha says. I know that, Millie says. 8:15.
You,
Derek says quietly, pointing at Agatha.
The yelling one. Don't lie to me now. If you do, you're going wherever he's going, and he's not going anywhere pleasant.
Agatha braces herself.
Have you or have you not been abducted by this man?
He gestures toward Carl. 8:15:28. Agatha can feel the little girl's eyes on her. She looks across at Millie. She's looking back at Agatha calmly. A child. A little girl. Agatha's suddenly sitting at the dinner table with her husband.
I don't want children, she said.
And his face, the gravity of it, the way it pulled down at her words, and her regret, the feeling in her body, later. 8:15:52. Chair of deception. 8:16.
I have,
she says, looking directly at Derek.
Yes.
Millie Bird.
We're not that invisible, I guess,
Millie says. Millie and Carl have been locked in Derek's office and Derek has taken Agatha away. No, Carl says, we're not.
What's going to happen?
He kisses Millie on the forehead. I don't know, just Millie.
Why is Agatha mad at you?
She asks. She's a woman.
Am I a woman?
Yes.
But I'm not mad at you.
Thank you.
Are you mad at me?
Of course not.
It's my fault.
No.
Are we going to find my mum?
Of course.
Do you mean that?
But before Carl can answer, the door is unlocked and Jeremy pokes his head inside.
Psst! Captain Funeral,
he says, checking the hallway behind him and then sliding inside. He stands with his hands on his hips.
Hi, sir,
he says to Carl, shaking his hand.
I'm Captain Everything, sir.
He looks at Millie.
Captain Everything is here.
He's drawn a black mask around his eyes and a moustache on his upper lip. He wears an Indian Pacific cloth napkin around his neck as a small cape.
What are you doing?
Millie asks.
You're in trouble. I've come to rescue you.
Millie, Carl says, who is this boy?
I'm Captain Everything, sir,
Jeremy says.
I told you they're talking about you.
Who? Carl asks.
All the train people. The police are coming to meet you at Kirk Station.
Millie and Carl look at each other.
Derek was like, I'm calling the bleeping police, and...
Jeremy jumps a few feet to the left.
My mum was like, you should wait, Derek, and then...
He jumps back.
Derek was like, I'm bleeping doing it, Melissa. You bleeping trying to stop me. And she did bleeping try to stop him, but he did it anyway. And mum called him a bleeping face, and I was camouflaged so they didn't see me. So I stole the key to this room, and even if they did see me, I would have karate kicked my way through them.
He does a kick in the air and chops with his hands.
Because I can do all sorts of things like that.
What's that on your face?
Millie says. He touches it with his fingertips and grins.
My disguise.
I like your spirit, young man, Carl says. And your moustache. Jeremy looks at them both with a grave face.
You have to leave right now.
Are you serious? Carl asks.
Oh, I've never been more serious, sir.
Jeremy goes first. He looks out the door, right, then left, and turns back to wave them on. Carl goes next, holding Manny around the waist so that his chin rests on Carl's shoulder. Then Millie. Manny stares over Carl's shoulder at her as they walk through the carriages.
It's okay,
she mouths at him. She looks at Manny's plastic hair and her head detaches itself. Dad's hair, when they are at the beach and Millie says,
Your hair looks like a pineapple.
Dad's hair on the tiles at the hairdressers. Dad's hair in the morning. Dad's hair, Dad's hair, Dad's hair. And her stomach pulls and her head reattaches itself. And they pass the farting baby, the angry man, the peaceful grandma, the girl who gets to have a mum. Millie holds the backpack on her front and feels the cape against her back, hanging there without moving, like the skin of a dead animal. Jeremy leads them to a door that opens outside to the very back of the train. The wind makes her cape alive again, and it jumps around behind her, as if it's trying to get the best view, excited to be there, in the wind and fresh air. They look out at the desert. Millie has never seen so much sky.
What about Agatha?
Millie asks.
Who cares?
Carl says.
It's not kind, Millie says.
She's not kind.
Jeremy puts water bottles and muesli bars in Millie's bag.
Just go that way,
he points, gazing up at Millie.
This is amazing, Carl says, holding Manny up. See that, Manny? This is Australia.
Here's a map, Jeremy says. Mum helped me draw it when I told her I wanted to show everyone at school what I did for the holidays, and here's a compass. There's a pub here, the Great Australian Pub.
He points to a position on the map.
You can stay there for the night.
He looks behind him and then back at Millie.
Mum and I stay there when we're visiting Dad. Just follow the road south and you won't miss it.
Where did you get all this stuff?
Millie asks.
I'm Captain Everything.
Are you sure about this?
Millie asks, feeling her own cape whipping about behind her. Jeremy stands and looks Millie square in the face. His pen mustache twitches a little.
Yes, Captain Funeral. I feel like I'm in a movie, Carl says.
Will they make a movie about my life, Millie?
Do you think Paul Newman could play me? Or that Branson Spike fellow?
Millie looks over the edge of the train. The ground is running fast beneath them.
How are we going to get off?
Yeah, Captain Everything, how are we going to get off? Carl asks.
Jeremy starts to say something, but Carl interjects.
Don't worry, Millie, Carl says. Manny and I'll jump off, then run to catch up with the train. Then you jump off. I'll catch you, I promise.
But sir,
Jeremy says,
there's a...
Carl puts a hand over Jeremy's mouth.
You've done enough for us, Captain Everything.
He takes a deep breath. He tucks Manny sideways under his braces so that his hands are free.
You believe in me, don't you, Millie?
Millie doesn't answer. So Carl takes that as some sort of an agreement and says,
I am going to do this. I am a very cool person.
He grips the railings, preparing for a run-up.
I am going to do this. I am going to do this.
And the train comes to a very, very slow halt. Carl releases his hold on the railings. He turns to Jeremy.
This is Rold Station,
Jeremy says, looking up at Carl.
We have to pick up and drop off mail here. It always stops for a few minutes. Sorry, sir.
Carl sighs and mutters to himself. There's a ladder off the back of the train, and Carl climbs down it. He does a jump off the bottom rung and winces as he lands. Millie backs down the ladder. When she gets to halfway, she stops. Jeremy's looking down at her. She clambers back up the ladder.
What are you doing? Jeremy says. You've got to go. I order you, as another captain, to get off the train. I'm pulling rank. Get off the train.
Millie grabs him by the shoulders and kisses him on his fake mustache. His cheeks burn a fierce red, like her hair, like the earth out there.
Please tell Agatha where we are,
she says, and climbs back down the ladder. Carl and Millie stand together on the train track. Millie salutes Jeremy.
Thank you, Captain Everything, she says.
Good luck,
he says, a lopsided grin on his face. Millie stands on the track until the train starts up again and slowly moves farther and farther away.
I'll never forget you, Captain Funeral,
Jeremy yells, and Millie watches the train until it disappears, and there is no sound but the sizzling of the sun on her skin. Carl hugs Manny to his chest.
Look at it all.
He sweeps his free hand through the air.
This is Australia. You know, real Australia.
Millie starts to walk in the direction that Jeremy pointed.
Come on, Carl,
she says.
Look at this sky. Look at this dirt.
Carl kicks it with his foot and it flies everywhere.
Look at this scrub. There could be dead bodies buried in every square inch of this place, and we wouldn't know. The British exploded practice bombs out here and no one even knew. Bombs, Millie! Back home I can't even scratch my behind without my neighbours wondering what sort of bum disease I have. Oh, but out here, no one knows what I'm doing.
He holds Manny up over his head.
Did you hear that, universe? He says.
He stops, takes a big breath, and screams at the top of his lungs.
No one knows what I'm doing out here!
Millie is not listening. All she hears is the sound of her feet hitting the ground as she walks. Each footstep like this. Mum, Dad, Mum, Dad, Mum, Dad, Mum, Dad. Carl is meters behind her, staring up at the sky, turning around in circles like Millie sometimes does when she wants to make herself dizzy. She is annoyed at him. They don't have time for this.
We need to hurry,
she calls behind her.
Part 4. Agatha Panther. 10:37 a.m. The blonde woman helps Agatha off the train at Kirk Station. Just sit tight, Agatha, she says. The train back to Perth will be passing by in the next few hours. They know to look for you. She smiles reassuringly. Make sure to remember to get off at Kalgoorlie. There's a bus connection there that'll take you back to the south coast. You'll be back in your own home sooner than you think. Take care, won't you? Agatha nods and watches her walk away. Home, Agatha says, bringing her handbag in close to her chest. Yes. She adjusts her glasses. 10:39. A man approaches her.
Excuse me, he says. Do you have the time?
Agatha puts a hand over her watch.
Do I have it? Do I own time? No, I don't. I'd like to talk to the person who does, though. I don't know what the time is. I'm on Agatha's standard time now. Whoa, lady, he says. Sorry I asked. Yes, Agatha says. You are.
10:41. The train is still there and people are milling about, waiting to be told when they can reboard. A woman walks past Agatha, one of those uppity types, wearing her hair in a bun on top of her head, as though it were a topping.
You're not a dessert lady, Agatha says, leaning forward.
A man walks past, wearing a pink jumper.
Jumper too pink, she says a little louder. Walking too wide, she says, raising the volume a little more.
She holds on to the edge of the bench with both hands.
Clouds shouldn't be doing that, she yells, coming to stand. Unreasonable nose. Serial killer haircut. Sunglasses too big. Too many children. Eyes too close together.
She's interrupted by a young boy running up to her. He has a black moustache drawn on his face.
You drop this, miss, he says, handing her the age book.
She takes it, and then he runs away, his neckerchief catching the wind. She watches as he jumps and kicks at the air, and then disappears onto the train.
Not a real moustache, she says.
She opens the book and runs her eyes over her careful measurements of cheek elasticity, arm wobblage, distance from nipples to waist. Number of times I've almost kissed Carl.
What?
She says. In handwriting she doesn't recognize, it continues. Snorgraph. Smiling moments. Number of times Carl has wanted to kiss me. My favorite Agatha faces. Buses I've attempted to steal. She turns the page. Boozy men I've beaten up. She laughs at this and keeps turning the pages. Number of insults I've yelled. Dead things I've seen. Distance I've travelled by bus, train, foot. People I've loved. After the last one, there's a big question mark. A map is stuck onto the next page. Someone else has written, "Hello, you are here," with a red cross and a drawing of a car. "They are here." Another red cross and another drawing, this time of a building with "The Great Australian Pub" scrawled along the top of it. A black arrow from one red cross to the other. "Yours sincerely, Captain Everything." The book shakes in her hands. 10:54. She stands in front of the mirror in the train station restroom. "They shall not grow old," she says. She pinches her cheeks. "As we who are left grow old."
"Forearms too spotty," she yells suddenly.
She unbuttons her jacket and tosses it on the ground.
"Man hands," she yells, holding her hands up in front of her.
She kicks her shoes off into the wall.
"Fat feet."
She unbuttons her blouse and drops it on the ground.
"Boobs too long."
She unzips her skirt and pushes it down from her waist, wiggling it over her hips to the ground.
"Belly button too high up."
And she stands there in her bra, undies, stockings, her glasses still firmly on her face, looking at herself in the mirror, breathing heavily from the effort of looking at herself like this.
"Nostrils flare when speaking."
She links her hands together in front of her, resigning herself to something, trying to lend some sort of sophistication and dignity to a situation that has neither.
"Too old," she says.
She takes off her glasses and rests them on the sink. She puts her palm on her face against her cheek and leans into it.
"Too old,"
she says, looking into her eyes. It occurs to her that Ron's face will never age again. She will never get to see what he looks like as a really old man. It doesn't seem fair somehow that she has to show the world what she looks like as an old person, and he doesn't. Like he's got away with something. She's hating herself, her body, and she's crying now, tears that dribble down her face so pathetically. And she is an old, 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 sad, sad, sad woman. And she hates herself. She hates herself so very much, more than anything else. This is what she feels the most. And then a toilet flushes, and a woman walks out of the stall. The woman walks straight to the mirror and washes her hands in the basin. She's skinny and muscular, and has a long, thin nose that draws attention to itself. Agatha stops herself from yelling it and stands there in her underwear, unsure of what to do. There's an awkward silence as the woman washes her hands. Then,
"Where are you headed?" the woman says.
The southwest coast,"
Agatha says, feeling her body around her so hugely.
"Perth for us,"
the woman replies, smiling at Agatha and then pulling at the skin around her eyes.
"Just trying to get away."
She pokes her tongue out at herself in the mirror.
"You know how it is."
She straightens her shirt, winks at Agatha and walks out. 11:12. Dressed again, Agatha stands near the train station cafe counter, gazing longingly at all the fried food, feeling her stomach grumble. She stands a few meters away from the counter. The man behind the counter looks back at her.
"You all right?"
"Yes," she says, but doesn't move.
"Do you want something?"
"Yes."
He sighs.
"What is it, then?"
"One of those," She points to a spring roll. And one of those. She points to a meat pie. The man behind the counter puts them both in a brown paper bag. He slides it along the counter toward her. He nods at it.
That'll be $6.25, thanks.
Agatha is very, very hungry. She thinks about grabbing it and running. People do that, don't they? She has never wanted anything more. But then her mouth says, I can't.
You can't what?
I don't. She sighs. He grabs the bag.
Not a charity shop, lady.
I've got it, a voice says behind Agatha. She turns around to see the woman from the restroom waving a $20 bill in the air. She smiles at Agatha and breezes up to the counter. I've got it.
Just trying to run a business. Grow a heart. Just give me the money.
He grabs the note and dumps her change on the counter. He holds up the bag and shakes it, looking at Agatha.
Your lucky day, eh?
The woman snatches the bag from him and walks off. She motions for Agatha to follow. I'm Karen, she says, and puts the bag down on a table where a man sits. This is Simon, Karen says, brushing a hand affectionately across his shoulder. Simon is noticeably younger than Karen. He has strong, dark features. Son? Agatha thinks. Simon smacks Karen playfully on the bum. No, Agatha thinks.
Hey,
Simon says to Agatha with a wave and a smile. There are chunks of pastry in the gaps between his teeth. Karen pulls up a chair and pats the table gently. Agatha takes a seat and watches the bag, as if waiting to see what it might do next. You got a name? Karen asks.
Yes,
Agatha says. Karen smiles.
The quiet type, I see. Well, go on, eat up. What do you want from me?
Agatha says.
Ha! Karen says. What do I want from a woman who can't pay for a meat pie? Who yells at herself in her underwear, just eat your pie, lady.
Did someone say underwear? Simon says. He flicks the band of Karen's trousers. Karen nudges him with her shoulder.
Jesus, Syme, Karen says, stroking his cheek. You got a whole lot of shit in your teeth.
The two of them stifle giggles.
Go get yourself cleaned up, would you?
Simon stands.
Your wish is my command.
He grins, bows, and walks away. Agatha fishes the pie out of the bag and places it on top. She grabs some cutlery out of the stainless steel holder in the middle of the table, cuts the pie into small squares, and begins to eat it, one square at a time. She feels Karen's eyes watching her.
Want to talk about what happened in the loo? Karen asks.
No, Agatha says.
Can I tell you a secret then? Karen asks, leaning in closer.
No, Agatha says with her mouth full. Karen laughs. She leans farther forward in her chair. She glances behind her, then turns back to Agatha.
I've done something terrible, she whispers. I'm trying to, you know, get all that karma shit realigned. I don't know if I believe in that, but...
She winks. Just to be on the safe side. Good? Agatha nods.
Thank you, she says. And then... You haven't killed anyone, have you?
No, of course not. Karen shifts in her seat.
Drugs?
No.
Guns?
No.
You're a sex worker, aren't you?
No.
How bad?
Really pretty bad.
Out of 10?
8. Agatha swallows and looks at Karen.
And half. Karen wrings her hands. 10. Definitely 10. It's 10. I'm...
She puts her elbows on the table and interlocks her fingers. She looks Agatha in the eye.
Not a good person.
Agatha picks up her spring roll and takes a bite of it from the side of her mouth. She watches Karen as she chews. Agatha swallows, wipes her mouth with a napkin.
I'm...
Agatha clears her throat and says loudly and clearly,
I'm not a good person either.
Karen lets out a shaky noise.
As though Agatha's words have pulled this sound out of her mouth, she shoots her hand across the table and grabs Agatha's. "Do you think anyone is?" She squeezes Agatha's hand. Agatha looks at the hand on top of her own. She can see age settling like glad wrap over the surface of this woman's hand. And she doesn't feel happy about another woman experiencing the ravages of age, like she normally might, but she doesn't feel sad about it either, as she does about her own body. She only feels connected to this woman, like she is Agatha and Agatha is her, that they are the same. "Well," Karen says, "do you think anyone is good?" Ron. She thinks of Ron. And then Millie's face appears in her head and hangs there, so strong and still. And Carl, is he good?
"I'm Agatha," Agatha says, because she doesn't know how to answer the question.
Simon wanders back toward them.
"I peed on the urinal cake," he says. "It was pretty awesome."
He bares his teeth at Karen.
"All gone?"
Karen reaches for his hand.
"All better, hun," Karen says.
Agatha looks at their hands, fondling each other like it's the only thing in the room. She can't imagine having someone around with whom she'd be so familiar.
"Look, Syme," Karen says, checking her watch. "Would you go fill up the car? We better get going."
"Yes, mum,"
he winks. Simon walks off and Karen turns to Agatha.
"I left my husband yesterday."
Simon left his wife.
Agatha stares at her. "I got kids. Not too little, but not too old either.
We didn't tell anyone, we just left." Karen stretches her arms up over her head and back down again.
"God, it feels so good to get that out. Hope you don't mind."
"I do,"
Agatha says. Karen laughs.
"Fair enough. Anyway, I just want to be with Simon. I love my kids, but I love my life. I want one. A life, that is. The kids will understand one day."
"Probably not," Agatha says.
Karen nods.
"Well, I sure hope you're wrong."
Agatha thinks of Millie's mum, of how she left Millie. Agatha feels her body flushing with anger. It's rising up her body, is blotchy on her skin. She wants to see Millie's mum to say, "Who do you think you are? She's just a child." And she wants to say it to Karen now. "Who do you think you are?" But instead, Agatha says,
"It's a 10.
Karen slumps back in her seat. They sit in silence for a few moments. The cash register pings and fridges open and close, and people around them have inaudible conversations.
"Look, can we give you a lift anywhere?"
Karen asks finally.
"We're heading pretty much the same way. We'd be happy to have the company."
"No," says Agatha tightly. "I'll be taking the train back, thank you."
Agatha sits at the table in the service station and looks at her age book. "People I've loved." That question mark. That look from Millie's mum through her window so many months ago appears in her thoughts.
How do you get old without letting sadness become everything?
She thinks of the moments after Ron died, how she walked down the street and up her pathway and into her house, and the pressure she felt, the feeling as though her body were imploding. She thinks of the spare room in her house. What if, when she walked in that door, after seeing her husband dead, a child, their child, was sitting in the spare room, in their room, and Agatha had to sit down on the bed, their bed. Her bed? Would it have been a her? She had sometimes allowed herself to imagine it would be. And she'd had to say, what? What would she have said?
"Your father is dead."
How do you tell a child, your child, that this is how life